I'm not stirring. I'm just being real because you're going to watch back the show. He said, if Philip Miles knows that I'm on the other line, you're not going to answer the phone.
Blood, listen. I'm saying. I ain't here to put no... rubbish.
Come on.
And gas up, man. At the end of the day, man's from the road. Why would I be scared to... This ugly brother, why am I going to be scared to answer the phone to? Come on, bro.
Coming.
And this week, my voice is back to normal.
Come on.
So, come on down.
Aye. We're back, brother. We're back.
Back where it been nowhere.
Back, oh, yeah, no. Back. But I think you try to give me your son.
No, you're okay. Come on, drink the water.
Drink the water.
Drink some water, sir. You are the energy, sir. Drink the water.
Bro,
Leon McKenzie.
Never.
Yo, Leo, we're filming, big man. What's going on? We're filming our show, bro.
Leon.
Yo, Leon.
Still, sorry, but we just call the brothers, man.
Bro.
Yeah, chat, you might as well be in it now.
Bro, you see what I'm saying? We're just about to, yeah. I was just about to call John Barnes, tell Spencer, look in the back block, black book, the John Wick book, and look at that.
And Leo McKenzie.
Leon McKenzie, you see the football, it's the energy.
It's the energy, man.
It's serious.
Yeah, mate.
That's what it's all about, man. What's going on here?
Everything's come good, on. Man. You know what? You know what we're gonna have to do? We're gonna have to call your fighter, Philip Bowles. Yeah, man, he's got his big title defense coming up.
Yes, against Akeem, Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
So you got Mr. Brown and Mr. Boys.
Yeah.
Mr. Brown, yeah.
Yeah, man,
have they spoken already?
No. We're gonna get them on the show.
Okay, yeah, good, yeah. That'd be interesting.
Yes.
Yeah? What's your... Cause I know you're working hard right now as a trainer since retiring.
Yeah.
And losing that sick pack. I see you eating them chicken in a chicken shop.
Chicken wings.
I see.
Yeah. But don't get it twisted. It's still part of the process, man. I'm working on other things right now.
Yeah, I know. Losing your six pack.
Well, I've got a four pack then.
Yeah. Well, you better.
I'll take a four.
You're doing two better than me, mate.
Well, mate.
But yeah, it's gonna be a great fight. I know you've worked hard, meticulously, well, with
with Phil. Akeem Brown, he's very awkward.
Yes.
Southpaw, very. Energetic and moves a lot.
Yes.
He can't punch. He's not going to knock Phil out. He's not going to do anything in that respect. Phil's IQ is extremely high.
Yes.
And he's going to be fit because I've got him fit. Yes. Like he's just he's added some things to his armor, and we're ready for whatever. We're ready.
Having said that, how do you see the football training in comparison to the boxing training? Do you feel that the two can complement each other, or do you feel like?
Yeah, I don't think I could have done. I don't think I could have gone in at 35 years old into a professional boxing industry without having some form of athleticism, you know, within what I've done. So I think football, from an agility point of view. You know what I mean? All the things that come with work, everything else. I think, although I lost my footwork towards the end of the career.
Sorry to cut you. Like, Tundi always talks about, like the apple not falling far from the tree.
Yeah.
Your dad,
yeah,
went to the 1976 Olympics.
Yeah.
Right? Boxed Sugar Ray Leonard in the quarterfinals.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Let's not forget that. He was a decorated amateur. He was a British and European champion.
That's right.
Right? Your dad. Your uncle was British, Commonwealth, European, and world champion at three different weights.
Bingo.
In Duke McKenzie.
They call that bingo.
Right. Right.
So it's kind of
downloaded in the program because you was always around boxing, Leon.
Right. So this is what everyone sometimes forgets. Because I had 18 years in professional football, I've been around gyms from 8 years old. Like my dad had a gym in Streatham. Called the Park Tavern. Remember that?
I remember the Park Tavern.
Mm. Right, so he had the gym there. That's when all Mark Prince was coming in there.
Greyhound Lane, isn't it? Was it Greyhound?
Yeah. Just near like Mitcham. We was living in there for a few years, and I just used to go every day after school, and I used to just be around it in the gym. And that's where I started watching every type of fighter, what's needed, dedication, who's about the life, who's not, and just studied. So I really became, I was a boxer, really, turned footballer, really.
Okay.
Yeah, 100, 100, because it's downloaded in the program. So anyway, yeah. What's the future hold for you, Leon?
The future hold, obviously, I've got a massive year next year with the documentary that's finally going to land called Tenkan, which is my journey. And I've incorporated mental health awareness into this documentary.
You're doing
so that's
great
me
stuff with that, my friend.
You know, interviewing, honestly, some unbelievable athletes to right the way through to Hollywood stars like Dwayne Johnson. So,
Rock.
Wow. The film is going to be
out there with The Rock.
Man. That story is an unbelievable story because, like I say, I believe in energy, and since I've retired from boxing, I was always sort of planning to say, okay, it's going to end soon, but let me start planning now. That's what I was trying to say. Start planning now. Don't wait till your career's finished. Mm. Start planning when you're doing well, when you're going through, you're fighting, or whatever it is you're doing, because it's something I didn't do really well when I was coming towards the end of my football career. So this was a lesson learned for me, because while I started my boxing career, I was in now where, well, let me just start planning. Let me start building my speaking stuff. Let me start building what I want to come next after boxing. So when I retired the next day after my last title fight, I was ready to retire. And it was the point of, like, with this particular film, that's why I reached out to Dwayne Johnson, reached out, got hold of his manager.
Amazing.
And little did I know, a few days later, I'd get a text on my phone at 2 o'clock in the morning. My phone went off. Hi, Leon. Just to let you know, like, Dwayne's read your heartfelt email that I've forwarded on to him, and he's absolutely loving your story. He's loving what you're doing. He wants to fly you over and your team.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
I mean, energy to be honest, that, yeah,
100%.
It was one of them where, yeah, I put all that into that, and then we went on to the baller set. I couldn't believe what was happening, but at the same time, I could, because that's the energy I've put on. That's what I've truly passionate about. I'm passionate about saving lives, and my energy is going into that. So, you know, that was a fantastic interview. I've got brilliant interviews with Kelly Holmes, Ricky Hatton, the list is endless.
Wow.
That's coming next year. I'm looking to launch my own charity called the Fight It Charity. So that's going to be underway next year around the same sort of time. I'm doing my best to just keep things moving.
Positive.
100%. Positive. Leon McKenzie. Yeah, I mean, you were even scripting the show, but I saw the phone ring. I said, you know what, I can't ignore you because I got a ring.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm sorry, I crashed the show, man, but sometimes surprises are the best, right?
No, of course, 100%.
Never crashed
nothing. It was meant to be, brother. Yeah. It was the alignment of the universe, my friend. Yeah, I mean, listen.
But I'm very proud of you too. But, like, love the energy, love what's going on with what you're doing, and just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, Lee. Thank you very much.
Let's hear it. Round of applause for my guy, Leon McKenzie.
Bless
you. You see it.
Big up, Lee.
Take care,
and we'll catch you next week.
We'll be
Friday.
There.
Yeah.
Ringside at Yoko. The 29th on the Mickey Elliott Show.
Yes.
For the British.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a big deal. You know, it'd be the
Philip Bowles.
You know, he's 35. It'd be the
oldest man.
What he's going to achieve. It's a big deal. He's ready. I'm getting him right mentally. Yeah, he'd be the oldest man in that weight division. So that'd be fantastic achievement. I feel like I'm going into a fight as well. It's a big deal.
As a trainer, that's massive.
Yeah, it's a big deal. For me, so you know, a Commonwealth champion, but I'm a young baby trainer. In principle, like, I've studied this. I've got the right people around me. I know what's going on.
One second. Yeah, young baby trainer. Like I said, there are certain men that get the... They get the download. This is like the Matrix, right?
And it's been So
I ain't buying into that young trainer talk. You can
But I'm just trying to be humble with it. I'm just trying to be humble with it.
It's me you're talking to, right? It's me you're talking to. So spare me on them things, man. I'll come find you.
Right. It's all big good,
up,
man.
Expect
to see my face on some TV bits next year, man, because I've got a few things coming.
Yes.
Go do your thing, player.
All right.
Take care, brother. God bless, brother. Love
you. Nice doing the best, man. Bye.
All right, Spence, listen. All right, you know, I was thinking about this. A couple of weeks ago, you got our producer's hero on the line. You know what I'm talking about?
Wait, Andy Cole, yeah.
Andy Cole.
And Gary was gassed. he's still gassed.
I was talking to you yesterday, and I was telling you about when I was younger, because I was left footed, John Barnes was my man. Liverpool was my team. Have you got John Barnes' number in the black book?
I'm just slow. Come on, man.
No way. Come on. Impossible.
It's done, man. Come on, come on.
If you've got John Barnes in that black book, are you telling me you got him in the book?
Are you, well, you're asking me. It's me you're talking goodness. To.
All right, phone him then.
Yeah, call John Barnes, man. Chat.
Call him up.
My co-host, Tunde Ajayi, who trains Anthony Yard. He used to play football.
Judd, listen, I can talk for myself. Thank you very much, sir.
I can tell you're a footballer. Just by listening to your voice, I know you're a footballer.
Well, my son's at Palace at the moment. Second year
scholar. All right, okay.
Second year scholar. But I was just telling my son 5 minutes ago, you made me... I was John Barnes when I was a young man. I wanted to be like you so much.
As long as you didn't get me in any trouble with a woman, that's okay. Pretending to be me.
I had your picture on my wall. I was number 10. I was
John. Are you left footed?
I'm left footed as well. That's what I said.
Good lad.
Listen, man.
Andy, you said the wet look as well, John.
The wet look, yeah? And the tight shorts.
And the tight shoes.
Yeah, the jerry curl and the tight shorts.
As I'm
nice
talking
one.
Right now, I'm watching your highlights.
What
a player. Listen,
the good old days. That's when I was young and slim.
Let me give you the round of applause because this is an honour for me.
When we were young and slim.
Yes, sir. A couple of weeks ago, we had Andy Colon and our producer, that was his hero. And I'm saying, to get my hero on the phone right now is an honour, just Sir John Barnes.
Yeah, but you're showing your age now. You're showing your age now, mate.
I'm telling you. Anyway, Spencer, fire away.
Listen, man, it was an absolute pleasure meeting you a few weeks ago as well. But I remember, like, when I was a kid, Ron Schillingford, who used to be the editor of The Voice.
That's right, Ron, yeah. Yeah.
Of the editor of The Voice.
Spencer, you're showing your age as well, mate. Listen,
I am. Don't worry about that. But he brought me down to meet you at the Jamaica High Commission, and you gave a to the young kids. I was just a young professional fighter then. I was, 23 then. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, you were speaking, like, generically to the young people there, but it was more about, like, Tundi likes to ask every guest, like, what was your motivation?
Yes.
What was your motivation to do the stuff that you did, Mr. John Barnes?
My father was always my motivation.
Come on.
Because my father always said to me, whatever you're going to do it with integrity, do it with honesty, and do it with commitment. Brilliant. So whatever I did, that's that's the motivation. And particularly, in a team sport, my motivation was to do what's right for the team. As much as I may have been an individual player in terms of the way people thought, the perception they had of me, but my first and foremostly, my thought was, how can I help my team?
Brilliant.
So, you know, the commitment was just to the cause, whatever the cause happened to be.
Mm-hmm. Wait there. I've got to give you that, John, because that epitomizes what I've been saying for years. Don't be selfish, be selfless. Work for the betterment of the team. And
yeah, but look, Spencer was a boxer, right? Yeah, and you know, even boxing, and people may think it's an individual sport, but you got your sparring partners.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You got your trainers. It's a team. There's no individual sport doesn't require teamwork.
Thank you.
Who's gone through any sport understands the value of what a team is. And a team is a community. A team is a family. And you can widen it to the wider community, to your family, to your friends. And that's what life's all about.
Right. If we go back and we look at your time, like when you was out in Jamaica and you came to the UK, what year did you come to the UK, John?
Well, my father was a colonel in the Jamaican army, and he got sent as military attaché.
Your dad was second in command of the
Jamaican army.
People think that John Barnes is like some, he came over from, this Jamaican guy. No, John Barnes come from a steam. Yes.
But my father, and it was my family only came for 4 years, so we didn't emigrate. It was just a 4-year diplomatic post. He was a diplomat, and he got here for 4 years. And it came when I was coming up to 13. And when I was 17, my father got recalled back. I got offered a scholarship to go to Howard University, a football scholarship, which I was going to take.
Yes.
And 6 months before, my first club, Watford, just saw me playing in Sudbury Town by North London, sorry, West London by Wembley, and asked me to stay. And wow. And if that didn't happen, I would have gone back to America. Gone to a university there, done a degree and whatever, and, you know, probably been living in America or Jamaica now. But I still would have played football. Maybe not professionally, because in Jamaica there wasn't professional football at the time. But as I said, my commitment was to football, and I love playing football. So even if I had a job, I still would have played football, you know, in Jamaica for Cavaliers, which was my favourite team.
The thing that everyone will speak about is you, June 10th, 1984, when it, like, it was John Barnes.
Oh, come on, touch on that. Listen, the greatest moment. Listen, I'm sorry, John, I have to interrupt Spencer. Just call it the greatest moment in English football. That's what it
Look,
was.
Look, those Brazilians must have been drunk. Somebody would have tackled me. Come on.
Listen,
it's a little friendly match. Those Brazilians were jokers. I can't believe that nobody tackled me.
The goal is legendary. That goal, John, what was the feeling?
That was my first English. That's my first goal for England as well.
Your first goal, years yes, old. Sir.
Well, I'm playing in the Americana, which obviously, you know, is apart from Wembley, as far as I'm concerned. The Holy Grail of football, where Pele scored all his goals, and Brazilian football is my favourite football. So to even play in Brazil and to play against in the Maracanã Stadium against Brazil, and for England to win the first time ever in Brazil and to score a goal like that, yes, it was special. But as you know, as a sportsman, the most important thing is the continuation and the consistency you show over a period of time. So that was a great individual moment, but individual moments mean nothing unless you continue to grow and to improve and to try and maximize your potential week in, week out. So as an individual moment, yes, it was great. But I don't look at individual moments and judge, you know, my career. Although that was a special time, yeah.
Fantastic.
You know that John Barnes is a boxer, man, though. You know, he likes boxing, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
In fact, funny enough, I used to box at the YMCA on Regent Street.
Oh, wow.
I used to box, and I love to go sparring. I used to box for 2 years sparring. But I didn't like fighting people I didn't know. You know what it's like. You spar with your friends and a boxer the YMCA. Yeah. But I can't go and fight somebody. I don't know who this boy is. I'm not fighting it. So I went training 2-3 times a week at the YMCA. Loved on the pads, sparring with the people who box for the club. But when you start talking about serious boxing as you do, and you know, that wasn't for me. So but I did like boxing.
Have you got any favourite fighters?
Listen, everybody loves Mike, and I love
come
Mike Tyson.
I love
Mike Tyson. But I tell you what, that middleweight, welterweight division, with Wilfredo Benitez, Tommy Hearn, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, you know, it was, and Mike McCallum, obviously from Jamaica, and Colonel Whittaker, Sweet Pea Whittaker. I mean, you know, that was the golden age for me when you talk about boxers, and you had, particularly at that particular weight, where you had so many good boxers. You might not even have been a world champion and been one of the best fighters in the world, but they had just such a wealth and a dearth of talent. And of course, from the point of view of obviously Nigel Benn, Chris Eubank that time, and Michael Watson, I went to the Michael Watson Eubank fight, the Benn and Eubank fight. They used to go regularly, and that's when it really brought it home to you how dedicated and fit these people were. Because when you watch boxing on television, you know, we all think, I suppose football's the same. We all think we can do it, but when you're ringside and you see how quick and strong and aggressive these people are. Never mind, you watch it on television, you think, yeah, I like to have a little go.
Yeah,
why? You know, that really shows you.
Why didn't he throw the uppercut? You understand?
And of course, but that's where you talk about dedication being the most important thing in boxing. Yes, talent, but dedication, because one of my favorite boxers in terms of ability was Kirkland Lang. And Kirkland was a fantastic boxer. Incredible boxer.
Incredible.
But coming into the last, you know, 12, 13 rounds, you can see Kirkland like a little night out, and you can see that maybe he wasn't as good as he should have been. However, in terms of his ability, he was incredible.
Absolutely.
Kirkland Lang, I remember the night that he outpointed Roberto Duran, and for like 2 years, Don King didn't speak to Mickey Duff because he was looking, Roberto Duran was on his comeback trail, and he said, and then like Mickey Duff said, yeah, I've got a kid, you can put him in. And they put in Kirkland Lang, they flew him out, and Kirkland Lang.
Yeah.
Box out of his skin,
befuddled. Yeah, it was incredible.
Befuddled Roberto Duran, who's one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Absolutely, and I love Roberto because he was a warrior.
Oh man!
Talking about the greatest of all time, in 2016, you were voted by the Times, the prestigious Times newspaper, the greatest left footer of all time. So
they could have had that many left footers, I can tell you. So all the good players must be right footed then.
You're being too humble.
But let me tell you. You know, when things like that happen and you look at it, the demographic of people who are voting are obviously people under a particular age. Because when you look at people like Stanley Matthews and George Best and people who played in the 70s, who may not have been voted because the people that age don't have to use the internet to get the vote. So I take things like that with a pinch of salt. Yes. We all do what we do, and we're appreciated or we're not appreciated.
Yes.
But it doesn't necessarily... So if I wasn't voted, in that group. Yes. Would I have done less than I did? No. And the fact that I was voted, have I done more than I've done? No. So things like that, you know, I take with a pinch of salt. Once again, it's nice to be appreciated.
Yes, that's how it must feel, you know, you must feel great to, you know, have that kind of accolade bestowed on you, regardless if you're humble about it or not.
Absolutely. But the reality is that had I not been, if that accolade had not been bestowed on me, would I have done any less in my career? No, I did what I did, and if people appreciate it, they appreciate it.
No, you wouldn't. And as you say, you know, it's a small demographic. We have made the votes, and when you look at it from a broader perspective, you know, you can say, you're what about the George Bests? Where were they? Because these guys.
But of course, in 20 years' time, you have that vote again where people don't remember Brown Barnes. I won't be anywhere near it. No, but I still would have been the player I was.
No. John Barnes will always be remembered.
40 years then. 40 years.
Even 100 years.
They're going to call you.
Even 100 years. John Barnes is a living legend.
Well, this is our year at Liverpool anyway. I know that's why you're all saying that. Don't worry, this is our year.
And you know, listen, my son's an Arsenal supporter, and I had to show him that, boom, we broke your heart. John Barnes, he broke your heart. I'm telling my son, you need to study the legends. John Barnes.
Obviously, did he throw him 1989? Last minute when Arsenal, when we lost. I bet you threw him that one as well, didn't you?
We only dealing with winners. Right. And then, again, you're just a great player and someone that... I think all young people, you know, Spencer's always speaking about it. He's saying that the young people nowadays do not study history. And that's a great thing, which they're missing. A valuable part of their own careers that they're missing. And I think any young footballer...
Look,
go on.
Yeah, but I understand that. And you understand looking at me. But think about when you talk about Clyde Best and Luther Vitz and Ricky Hill, who were playing at the same time as you, but earlier, things that they had to go through.
Yeah, well, they should
to
study
me,
them
me
as well.
Be able to do what I do.
They should study them, you know, as well. That's absolutely the whole point. And I'm
absolutely.
Saying
that's
that,
what
you know,
history is.
We can't just forget about you in 20, 30 years or 40 years. And, you know, ask Spencer, tonight, after I get off the phone to you, I'm going to tell my son, who's a striker, number 10, number 9, study John Barnes because you're a legend. I'm just
telling you what he should study.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, when we look at people studying and you look at what we think they do, what he should study is the commitment and the work rate and the
100%.
Effort and the humility for the team.
100%.
That's the most important thing, and that's what makes footballers.
Yes,
because when you look at Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, what we see is how great they are. What we don't see is how hard they work.
Yes,
Monday
yes.
to Friday, the training, teamwork that they actually put in, because we just like the prettiest things that they do.
That's
but
right.
that is the end product.
Yes,
the hard work is what he does for the team.
I was telling a boxer this just this afternoon. You know, the glitter, the glam, it looks great, but it's the hard work.
Get out on the road on a run.
Yes,
yeah. You know, like
no matter what you say about my favorite boxer, I didn't even mention him, Muhammad Ali. Favorite ever, Muhammad Ali. And I tell you what, when people look at him and they think he's pretty and he does this, he does that, you see him in the gym training, you see him running, you see him when he works. And for that man to fight for as long as he did, when he's willing to go the distance, 15 rounds, when he's however old he is, you know, and being able to do that shows that, okay, he has the talent. But when you talk about someone who's committed, absolutely fantastic.
Right. John, who was your idol in football when you was growing up?
Well, don't forget, I grew up in Jamaica till I was like 13 years old. So I didn't have, and I loved, my dad went to the 1972 World Cup and came back with my first pair of football boots. Sorry, 72 Olympics in Munich, came back with my first pair of football boots, Adidas Gerd Müller from Germany. And of course, I'm living in Jamaica. And of course, Gerd Müller, Franz Beckenbauer, West Germany, I'm a favorite team. Then of course, I've come to England. And when they asked me what my favorite team is, and I said West Germany, they said, no, you can't have West Germany. Something that in 1945, you better pick another team.
Yes.
But West German football, I love. Franz Beckenbauer, Wolfgang Overath, growing up in Jamaica, I just love West Germany. And of course, because no matter, and they won the World Cup against the one of the most talented teams in Holland, but West Germany won that because of their commitment and their determination, never say die attitude. Yes, they had talent, but they're some of the biggest qualities that you need to be successful. So even from a young age, and my dad really instilled this in me, that forget about what ability you may have, you have to have the right attitude and commitment. So West Germany for me epitomized that.
Sorry, I've got to give you a round of applause, John. I've got to give you a round of applause.
Hey, John's a man. Like, I see, like, you're a very humble man now, John.
Yes.
Right?
But when he said now, hasn't he always been humble?
Well, he wasn't humble, but I'm going to fashion now because everyone knows I like to dress and I like to dress smart and stuff like that. But John Barnes used to wear some garms, you know, bro.
Listen, that was the 80s. Looking back, and as much as we think our time, you know, we all have our time, yeah? Some people are the 90s, some people in the 70s were cool. And in the 80s, I thought it was fantastic in the 80s. But looking back and being objective, 80s wasn't a great time for fashion. 70s was good. No mind the flares and whatever, but 70s was good. And the 80s was when I was in my prime, and you know, the stuff I used to wear was like, yeah, this is the best time. And looking back, but I think I can be objective now and say 80s was not great. So I have to apologize for some of the stuff I used to wear back then.
Yes, sir.
Now, what are you talking about? You had swag, John. You had swag.
Well, it was swag in the 80s, but looking back in 2020 now, that's what I'm saying. You're looking back in history, and the 70s was John, even looking back now, you can say the 70s was cool, but John, the 80s wasn't great.
I've just, we live in a tech world. I've just typed in John Barnes outfits.
I know. Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. This is radio. It's not television, is it? It's radio.
I bet you
can't even describe it. You can't even describe what I'm wearing, can you?
I'm looking at like a black shirt. It's like a black leather number.
Yes. I've still got that one now. What are you talking? I've still got that black leather shirt now. I'm wearing it to New York.
Listen, I'm seeing some nice images: a brown leather jacket with a black shirt, jeans. You looking sharp. You're looking sharp.
I'm telling you, I've rocked triple denim as well. Don't worry about that. Never mind double denim. I'm like triple denim.
Triple denim. Yes, sir.
John Barnes, you're the man. That is excellent. And he's been
you give me a ring anytime you want, mate. Give me a ring anytime.
100%, man. John Barnes, big up yourself, man. You made Tundi's day, man.
Yeah, trust me. Thank you very much, John Barnes.
I'm telling you, it's time to be a Liverpool fan from now on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, mate. It's a pleasure.
Thank you,
John. See you later.
Take it easy.
Okay. Bye.
You know what? It's like it's an honor to speak boxing.
Yes.
Right? And I'll speak boxing. And the maddest thing is like, I actually get paid to talk this thing, which is something that I would do for free. I would do this for free right now. You know what I mean?
Well, give me the money and you do it free then. Don't come with that. I'll do it for free business.
I would do it for free, but, yeah, I'm telling you, child maintenance, right?
Come on. Right, so, but nappies are expensive.
Yeah, but, you don't need to tell me that. So, but good guys, I'm telling you, like Ron Katz is the guy you always used to talk about. Always talk about that guy.
From back in the day. Matchmaker, right?
Excellent matchmaker. You know what I mean? We got to talk to him, Tony. I got a phone.
You know where you got Ron Katz's number?
Tony.
It's not possible.
Ye of little faith. Bruv,
I'm going to rub your phone. I'm going to rub that phone because that phone is powerful. the Black Book, a.k.a. Spencer's phone, is the most powerful phone in boxing. It's official. If you've got Ron Katz, John Barnes, all them man there, Andy Corral, the guy is a legend. Come on, call him.
Done. The fight is right.
The one.
And our special guest right now, Tun.
The one, the only.
Yep. Ron Katz. Ron, how you doing, come brother? On.
Hey, Spencer, it's truly an honor to be on this podcast with you.
Listen, man.
Thank you. No applause necessary. Thank you. Please sit. My next show starts in an hour, so hold the applause, please. Nah, it's great being on with you, Spencer, such an esteemed guy like yourself.
That means a lot, man.
Great historian.
Thank you.
Very knowledgeable of our sport, so it's really cool to be on with you.
Listen, for me to hear that coming from you, you know what I mean, it's a good thing I'm sitting down because that's an honor. And thank you very much, sir. Look, Ron, you've been in the game for like 50 years, brother.
Going on it, getting close, pal.
Yeah, well, like if you're saying 46 years, that's 50 years as far as I'm concerned. That's like
yeah, 44 years.
That's as long as I've been living, right? You've done. it's the truth. I was born in 73. Like you've done so many fantastic things, from like working with Top Rank, working with Sugar Ray Leonard, being around Muhammad Ali. Like, what would you say your standout accomplishments have been?
Why did I know you were going to ask me that? Because that, you know, there's been so many great events with great fights. It's tough to pick out one, mm-hmm. but if I, you know, one. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes, we can hear you, sir. We can hear you.
Yeah, because I'm getting calls. I apologize.
Don't worry. You're a busy man.
One thing that really stands out for me was when James Toney went and knocked out Michael Nunn in Davenport, Iowa, when Nunn was considered untouchable.
Yes.
And James, you know, was my baby.
1991, that was.
Malone. And he scored a massive upset. So, and then the Barkley, you know, on a different level there, the Barkley-Hearns fights were great. Barkley-Duran. I mean, you know, there's been so many, but, you know, those kind of stand out to me.
Well, the Barkley-Duran fight, that was fight of the year. I remember that. Like that.
That was in Atlantic City. My wife sang the national anthem. We had an unbelievable blizzard that night in Atlantic City. Nobody thought Duran had a shot.
Wow.
And it turned out to be fight of the year.
It was
in front of like a sold out house. You couldn't even move in the city. That's how much snow was there.
What was that? That was Duran Barkley. What was that? February 89. That was. Yeah. That's when that fight was.
Yep, yeah, back in the late 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That was an incredible fight because at the fact that who would have thought looking at Roberto Duran losing to Tommy Hearns at the time when he boxed Tommy Hearns, and then who would have thought like 5 years later that you would have seen that same Roberto Duran in a ring defeating a man that defeated Tommy Hearns to become WBC middleweight champion of the world.
Come on, spit the knowledge.
He really put forth the effort that night. What a terrific fight that was. Place was going nuts too. You know, those are great events. There's been so many. That's when Atlantic City was Atlantic City, you know, the one of the fight capitals along with Vegas over here in the States before all these other casinos and states popped up. So those are the good old days.
Hi, Ron. Tunde here, co-host for the show. Tell me, what really inspired you to become a matchmaker, and how do you feel boxing has changed over the years?
Well, for me personally, I was never really, to be honest with you, a big boxing fan. I mean, I knew who Muhammad Ali was, but I was more of a baseball fan. Yes. And I went to work with a guy named Lou Falcino, mm-hmm. who, along with two other guys, developed the technology for closed-circuit TV back in the 70s.
Yes.
Wow.
And one thing led to another, and we started doing live shows, and I was like a gopher. And then I was lucky enough to meet, you know, guys like Johnny Boz and Bruce Trampler, who kind of took me under their wing, and the rest is history.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
As far as I'm, you know, my story goes. Now, boxing today, you know, has changed dramatically. We've all seen it.
Yes.
Now you have, you know, the streaming services dominating the fights that are available to the fans, where in the past, obviously, it was, you know, either closed circuit pay-per-view or free television, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And even before, you know, you had CBS, ABC, NBC over here in the States, especially after the 76 Olympics, you know, with the Leonard, Howard Davis, that team,
yes.
Spinks Brothers, all them guys. But now, you know, people watch fights on their phones.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's evolved with the technology that's available today.
So basically, you know, you can't really, do you foresee the death of pay-per-view then, basically? You know, it seems that the streaming is the way forward. Or, you know, can we see the pay-per-view system coming back? Or,
well, I think it'll always be around.
Yes.
You know, for example, the fight this weekend with Deontay Wilder and Ortiz.
Yes.
And I think when, you know, there is a fight that calls for the magnitude to reach as many people as you can and generate as much money as you can, mm-hmm. It will be seen on pay-per-view, no matter who might be the promoter.
I understand. Another thing I want to say, you hold a record of being Ring Magazine's Matchmaker of the Year for 7 years on the truck.
Consecutively.
Wait,
there's a clap.
Yeah, that's right. You're turning. Oh, thank you. Once again, thank you very much. Please sit. There's more to the show. Thank you. Don't forget, second show in an hour. Yeah, no, those are the good old days. You know, when Ring Magazine and KO Boxing, you know, gave out yearly awards. Those were during my top rank HBA days from the late 80s through the middle 90s. It was always me one, Russell Peltz two, and Bruce Strampler three.
Yes. I remember one time you were saying that, you know, a matchmaker is the most underappreciated, undervalued person in boxing. Now, why did you say that? Why would you make a statement like that, Ron?
Because, you know, the matchmaker is always the guy behind the scenes. He's not the guy, you know, in front of the camera, like the promoter, like the fighters, the participants. You know, he's like the heartbeat, and the heartbeat hides behind the chest, so you can't see it. But, it's such a tough job because there's a lot more than just putting two guys together. Sometimes that's the easiest part.
It's
everything else that goes along with it, especially nowadays with the necessary medicals, you know, needed, you know, for the safety of the fighters, which is, you know, so important. The travel, the applications, the paperwork. So matchmaking has evolved into more than just, you know, when my mentor, Teddy Brenner, the greatest ever, would call up two guys. Greatest ever.
Trust me, no one could touch that guy.
Okay.
No, absolutely. He took Bruce Strampler under his wing, and then, you know, Bruce brought me in and he took me under his wing. And being with Teddy as many years as I was, which was not enough, was such a wonderful thing. Just to hear all the stories was worth it.
Well, I have to say, Ron, this has been a very insightful, especially for me, because, listen, I've known Spencer more than half of my life, and for years he's always been saying, Ron Katz is the man. Ron 100%. Katz is the man. He's been telling me this for so long, and just to hear your voice finally after hearing you in so many stories is really an honor and a pleasure for me.
Well, that's so kind of you, but believe me, it's my honor to be on with you guys. I mean, you know, when Spencer called me, I was really excited. I mean, you guys, you know, I hold you both in very high esteem, so.
Thank you very much.
And I'm shocked you didn't even talk about the Joshua Ruiz rematch.
We're getting to that. Don't worry about that. We're getting to that.
If I miss the food after this press conference, I'm booking a Concorde right now.
We want two quick answers. Well, not quick, just a little,
insight from your knowledge.
First off, Wilder v. Ortiz prediction.
My phone's been ringing, so I'm sorry I didn't hear you. Wait, just give me a second for it stops to ring. I don't know if it ring. Okay, it stopped.
All right, Wilder versus Ortiz 2. What's your call for that fight, Ron?
Well, I like Deontay in the match, but again, you know, with a guy like Ortiz, everybody talks about his age, but age doesn't matter really with a guy like that because he can flat out fight. Nobody wants to fight him, so he's not an easy out. You know, and age didn't matter when George fought more and you know, obviously Bernard Hopkins fought, you know, well into his 40s. Excellent. But, you know, Deontay to me really is underrated. People think he just punch, but he can do a hell of a lot more than just punch. 100%. And he showed that with Brazil with that piston-like jab of his followed by a right hand, which we know carries unlimited power. Okay. So all that being said, I think, you know, Ortiz will give him a little bit of fight, but, you know, I think Deontay might get him out a little quicker this time.
Yeah, I think, especially after the Brazil fight, I think before he believed in his punching power, but the way that he demonstrated, that was horrid. That was brutish.
I mean, you know, the double jab followed by the right hand was, you know, look at some of the great heavyweights of the past, the Lewis guy, you know, Joe Lewis, guys like that. Not saying he is that, but, you know, that was so reminiscent of what they used to do.
Yes, double jab, right hand.
But not only that, I think he's become very underrated because he enjoys knocking out guys.
And because Deontay is a little more skilled than people give him credit for. Let me tell you, you know, he still gets a little too excitable in the ring, which people, you know, tend to focus on that and get sloppy.
Yes.
But the guy has skills. He wouldn't be as far as he's gotten if he didn't have skills.
Yes. And finally, the mega match, the rematch between Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz. Let's hear your thoughts on that, sir.
Well, to me, this is a very interesting fight. We all know both guys could fight.
Yes.
So to me, this comes down completely to the mental aspect of the fight itself, where the two fighters' heads are at. To me, that's paramount. Because one, with Ruiz, you know, did all the fame and fortune that came along with his great upset affect him? Does he still have that hunger?
That's what I said.
With the other guy, with Anthony, how is he going to react if this guy gets in the ring and starts doing the same thing? Mm-hmm. How is he going to overcome the thoughts that are going to go through his head? Uh-oh, here we go again.
Yes, yes.
So to me, it's a battle of the mental aspect.
Okay, but
rather than physical.
We don't want no sitting on the fence run.
Yeah, what's your call, Mr. Kaz?
The prediction from the great Mr. Kaz coming.
Oh, you going to put me on the spot?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, most definitely. This is the fight is right.
It's going to be a draw.
Come on.
How's that? Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you. You're such a great audience. Thank you. Oh, it means the world to me.
You mean, Ron,
thank you.
I have to thank you for coming on the show. Seriously, you're my guy. You've always been my guy for a hot minute. Yes. But even more than
that, I love you, Spence.
Yeah, thank you very much. So who's the young guy? Because you're at a press conference now. Who's fighting?
We have two local kids, Johnny Hernandez here in Long Island and Danny Gonzalez. They fought a terrific fight, which Gonzalez squeaked out a decision. You know, two, you know, real solid club level type fighters,
right,
that give it their best. And that's all you can ever ask of anybody who climbs 100%. Through the ropes is, yes, to give it your best, no matter what ends up happening. Yes, so they're doing a rematch Saturday in front of our home base, the Paramount here in Huntington, Long Island, sold out show. It's our 37th show there. We sell out just about every show. So it'll be a fun night again.
Fantastic.
Keep on doing what you're doing, Ron. And can I also say a massive, fantastic congratulations of you becoming a
Thank
Hall of
you.
Famer. You know what I mean? That must be a really, really big back. Atlantic City.
Thank you. Oh, what a great audience. It was the best audience I've ever performed in front of. Thank you. Thank you. Nah, this one means a lot to me. It really does. I made my bones down there, so it means a lot to me. And thank you guys for having me on. It was truly a pleasure, and I loved it.
Thank you.
The one, the only.
And I got to wait, time out. Just hold on a second. I have more to say. Okay. I must thank one Spencer Fearon for turning this dinosaur onto WhatsApp.
Yeah, yes, you're welcome, sir. it wasn't that, man.
All right, guys.
I'm not going to ring America and pay them charges, man. Trust me.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Take care. Right, God bless
you. Thank you again. All right.
The
bye-bye.
The one and only Ron Katz. Ton, you want to just silence yourself now. Don't call back if I've got this person's number and that person's number. I don't want to hear it ever again.
Now, all I'm going to say is, draw for the black book. that's what it is. I'm not going to say, have you got it? I'm just going to say, draw for the black book.
You know it. The black book's got...
All right. Let me see if you got this one. The magic man. You know.
Paulie Malagi.
No, forget about that one. No disrespect, Paulie. The man. The man that said. The man. From. The real magic man. The real magic man is the man that said the famous words. You got any excuses tonight, Roy?
Right, it's Antonio Tava's birthday today, you know.
For real?
Yes, his birthday today. He's 51 years old.
Nah, that man, you call me the Cocoa Bible Kid, but he's the triple Cocoa Bible Kid. Bro, he's sharp. I'm not going to lie. He's so articulate, that brother.
Well,
all right. Draw for the magic man, Antonio Tava, if you got him in that book.
Come on, man.
Hey, how you doing, Antonio, before Spencer goes on?
Hey, man, I'm doing good.
The magic man. The magic man. The one. Oh, no, wait. Just wait there. You know, we got to give you a round of applause before we start this thing. Good to hear
All
from
right.
you.
All right. Thank you, my brother.
Yes, sir.
And a happy birthday to you. 51 years young today.
Amazing. That deserves another round of applause.
Yeah, man.
Oh,
Hey, thank you, guys.
Antonio, tell me, because Spencer's calling me the cocoa butter kid, but you must be the double cocoa butter kid to be 51 years old and shine so brightly. Tell me your secret, brother. We need to know. I need to get 2 barrels of what you're using.
Hey, you know what? It's coming, man. We packed it up real nice, man. We're going to get out there so everybody can get this magic secret I got. You know what I mean?
Yes. Go ahead. Anyway,
Antonio, if we just go look at your career has been excellent. You got to remember
illustrious.
I remember reading the Ring magazine, and at the time, the Ring magazine was stating like you were America's. I don't know what's going on here.
This is live radio, so yeah, our phones are going.
Was one of America's most decorated amateurs.
Yes,
right. You had an incredible amateur record. When you were going into the Olympics, the talk was all about you, and at the time there, you had a Floyd on the team for the Atlanta, Georgia Olympics in 96. Antonio Vargas was on the team as well. Fernando Vargas was on the team. There were so many names on the team, but you were like the guy that everything was on. I think you was the team captain as well. Everything was like, all the lights were on you, sir. When you didn't come out with that gold medal, did that make you even more hungrier to turn pro and succeed as a professional fighter?
Good question.
I don't think because of it, no. I think, you know, once everything got going, you know, I saw that, you know, my role would be a little different than others. You know, I knew that, you know, I would have to buckle in and, you know, really dig deep because, you know, I just had a different role than the other guys that were, you know, highly titled on that team that stood out on that team. And when you think about everything I had accomplished prior to, you know, the 96 Olympics, and even coming out of that Olympics with a bronze medal, eventually losing to the gold medalist, Vasily Jirov, I mean, I don't understand, when I think back, I don't understand how I started my career. And I didn't even have a manager or a promoter that felt that I was worth anything investing in, you know, or getting behind or moving or directing, you know. So I never had that. I never had that cushion. It was all or nothing for me every time I stepped in the ring. So, you know, it wasn't no backup plan. You know what I mean? I was all in. That's how I look at it. And I had to do it that way. And I wouldn't expect it any differently, man. I didn't expect for anything to be easy or handed to me.
Yes.
I just knew if I stepped in that ring, they couldn't beat me, I was going to eventually get my day. You know what I mean? I just knew if they couldn't beat me, then they couldn't stop me. So I knew my day was coming.
Yes. So having said that, correct me if I'm wrong, you have never been dropped in a ring.
Or suffered a cut.
I mean, I've been knocked down once, man. I've been knocked down, a legitimate knockdown.
Okay.
It was against Reggie Johnson.
Yes.
He hit me with a little right hook. And I think that right hook dropped a lot of people. It dropped William Guthrie one time. He won the light heavyweight title.
Yes.
IBF light heavyweight title. But I fought Reggie Johnson, I think, in my 12th, 13th fight. And he was a multi-division champion. He was, you know, a solid fighter for Houston, Texas. And, you know, I proved that I belonged in that talk.
Yes, yes.
You know, I beat a solid guy. Reggie Johnson, you know, I think before I even, you know, took off. So that was for all the regional belts. I won the USBA and the NABF. So that made me number one contender, basically, across the board, when I beat Reggie Johnson.
Sorry.
Because after the Reggie Johnson fight.
Yes.
I remember you had the rematch fight with Eric Harding. The way you beat Eric Harding in the rematch, where you stopped him, you had to know Antonio Otavo was a serious brother.
Yes, yes, yes. And then beating Montel Griffin after that fight.
Yeah.
But the number one question, you know what the number one question is. You know what the number one question is, Montel. And let me tell you something. If people didn't know you before the Montel Griffin fight. They definitely knew you when you fought Roy Jones. Because after the first fight, I ain't even talk about the first fight. The first fight to me is irrelevant. It's what happened in the second fight. You go to the center of the ring and you say to Roy, you got any excuses tonight, Roy? Yeah. Come on, hold on. I've got to give you a round of applause. Can you see that? Those words will probably go down in the history of boxing. What made you so confident that you can defeat the mighty Roy Jones?
He was chasing him for years, though.
I want to hear Antonio answer it. Come on.
I got to be honest, man. I was confident after the first fight. Mm. I think I proved everything that night. Come on, man. I mean, we're talking about boxing. If you're judging that fight on the criteria of boxing, I mean, come on. Some judge had it 117-111. I mean, it's like, and so that was the first fight was the reason why I was able to knock him out, because I beat him, man. I punched him. I hurt him.
You damaged him mentally.
He was locked up. He was swollen.
Yes.
I beat him. I took the fight out of Roy. The first fight, it was over.
Yes.
You know, it was a new day in boxing, and they just didn't want to crown me. They didn't want to crown me, bro. Mm. And I told everyone, even in the 96 Olympics, you can ask my teammates.
Wow.
This was, I never knew that, you know, when I got off the couch and I ran 3 miles, when I saw Roy Jones in the 88 Olympics get robbed.
Yes.
Man, you know where I was at that day?
Come on.
Yeah, Sojong Park.
The book, let me tell you, the greatest story never told is coming.
Come on.
The book is coming because nobody.
Come on.
There's not an app.
Hold on, wait.
Let me say this. Hold on. I got to say this.
come on, Antonio.
And I want the world to hear me. There's not an athlete, bro. There's not an athlete.
Yes, sir.
In the world.
In the world
that have come. That have come from the pitch that I have, bro.
Listen.
And to stand on the top of that mountain in Las Vegas. I thought Roy Jones out.
Yes.
Bruh, if you knew where I came from,
come on.
You'll understand why they call me the Magic Man.
This is why I use these three words. Dream it, believe it, become it. Dream it, believe it, become it. They don't know about the story of the Magic Man, but you're hearing it today, Spencer.
You're hearing it.
The greatest story never told, baby. It's hashtag on the fight is right.
And you know what? Listen, man, there's so much we can talk about your illustrious career. You know, listen, we've got to touch on a Rocky. And we've got to touch on Rocky.
Mason the Dixon line.
Mason. Come on, brother.
How did you feel when you got the call up for that fight? How did you feel?
Come on.
Now, I'm going to tell you, man, right? In 96, after, you know, losing the gold medal. After losing the gold medal, I'll say that. Sylvester Stallone flew me in to Planet Hollywood. I met his family. We had a red carpet. And that night, Mason the Lion Dixon was born.
Wow.
But I had to catch up because, you know, I had to do the work.
Yes.
But I think that the vision, because I was a very outspoken person, even as an amateur.
Never. You know, I don't believe that.
I really, when I touch the mic, you feel me? When I touch the mic, people listen.
Yes.
So, you know, he saw what it was. And if you look at Mason the Lion Dixon, he really wasn't far fetched from, you know, the Magic Man himself.
Yes,
but at the same time, like I said, the Mason the Lion Dixon was on, I think that night we walked that red carpet.
Yes, sir.
And then, you know, once I went on and did my thing as a professional, and the pinnacle of that was definitely the night I knocked out Roy Jones.
Mm.
I mean, I was actually going to training camp for the third Roy Jones fight.
And yes.
My phone rang, and that familiar voice was on the other end. And he told me, take care of my business. But, you know, I had to keep that on mute. And you can imagine. You know what I mean?
Imagine.
It was hard for me. You know, but I had to take care of the business, because later on I heard that, you know, he even told Roy Jones he was up for the part. Wow. So I really believe that, you know, if Roy probably would have beat me in that rematch, probably would have got the part.
He would have
got
the part.
But when I stretched Roy Jones, I think Sly knew that there's only one man that could be Mason Lyon Dixon.
Yeah, come on. Listen. You're just – do you – one question I want to ask. Let's go back. I know you just spoke about, you know, people don't really know where you come from and what you've been through. But one question I always like to ask the guests is, what was your motivation to actually become a boxer?
Wow, man. Just, you know what? It was simple, man. It was always just me against the other guy. Mm. You know, just me against him. And that's all it needed to be, bro. It really needed to be nothing else because that's just how I felt about me. And that's it. My name on the line, that's enough. You know what I mean? Because I got to protect everything. And it's, you know, my dreams, my goal, my wants, my desires, and how I saw myself. How I saw myself is something that I never could. The vision that I saw for myself could never change.
Yes.
For nobody. And I tell people today, man, it could have been anybody. It could have been anybody you can name. Sugar Ray Leonard. It could have been Hagler. It could have been all of them. I was going to approach it the same way, bro.
Come on.
And I don't know how else to, see it.
Yes.
And for any of those young fighters out there, man, hey, you know, don't read the headline. Don't believe the hype. Don't ever believe the hype.
Yes, sir. Come on, teach them.
Don't ever believe the hype. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if I would have ever saw Roy Jones like they saw Roy Jones, I could have never beat him.
That's right.
I could have never defeated the man. Because I didn't see him like that, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we fought at 13 years old.
Yes.
We fought at 13 years old. Oh, and don't nobody know how that fight went with me and Roy. Because we were in the ring together.
Yes,
but I bet you one thing, Roy knew that he was in there with somebody different. And he knew that shit all the time. He knew I was coming when nobody else did. He knew I was coming.
Yes, because you can't lie to yourself. You know. You know when the man in front of you is going to give you that work. And
Exactly. So, you know, and my thing was respect for it, man, because a lot of people don't understand. That man inspired me, bro.
Yes.
That man inspired me. It wasn't never no hate. It wasn't never none of that. It wasn't personal. It was just that shit. I had to do what I had to do, and he was just a man in front of me. You know what I mean?
I told you, wait. Listen, man, you are inspiring me. You don't understand what's going on. Listen, now, man,
there have been so many great fights, and you've been involved in so many great fights throughout your career.
Yes,
but I've touched on this. Now you're passing on your knowledge to your son.
Mm.
Now, Junior Tav, if you ain't seen him, he's a junior middleweight.
Okay.
Junior middleweight, yep.
And what's he now? Is he 8-0? Is he 8-0 now? How many fights you seen now?
He's 7-0. 7-0.
I always like to count the one ahead, right? So that's how.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So, and there is a competition now that's going on right now called the Golden Ticket, which is on Sky TV. Which is an MTK Global production.
Golden Contract.
Your Golden Contract, yes. Right? The Golden Contract.
Right.
And I'm sure if they do the light middleweight one, I'm going to have to put you in contact with the right people because I see your son fight and he can fight, man.
Yeah, but Tantonio, that's quite fight, interesting. You know? What do you think about these competitions that are kind of like, you know, cause me personally as a trainer and a manager, a trainer manager, Anthony Yard, and I manage a few other kids, I've never really been a fan of these competitions on one night.
It's not a one night competition.
No. But what I'm trying to say is it's a lucky dip. And I want to hear your opinion on it because I've always felt that that's like another man writing my destiny. And I want to be in control of my destiny and do things my way. And I've always felt that going into competitions like that, it's like a lucky dip. Antonio has to see. It's not different because you got.
Well,
come on,
go on, okay. Antonio.
I mean, I like the format, the competition format that they had, like yes. in the Super Six, whatever.
And this one's similar
like
to that.
Yes,
that's what it is. You
know, sometimes you can get the luck of the draw.
That's
you can get the luck of the draw. You get the tough guy first, whatever. But in a tournament style match, I just believe the cream always rises to the top.
Simple
you know
as
what
that.
I mean? If you take the politics out of the game, the cream will always rise to the top.
That's a very good point.
You can put these same six fighters in a tournament, and you can do a different tournament, different ways. The best fighter going to win. On a more consistent basis, the best fighter going to win.
Yes.
Nine times out of ten.
Having said
just
that,
like in rematches.
Yes.
Normally, the best fighter usually wins.
Okay,
and you
have a very impressive record
in rematches.
Yes,
sir.
Trust me.
Because
Roy Jones and Eric Harding, they have to call testimony to that.
And Glenn Johnson.
Yeah, and Glenn Johnson.
Let's not forget that.
And Kofi Johnson.
Yeah.
The Claradonian Jamaican man. Yeah. Right, but going back to your son.
Yeah.
Your son.
And there's only one rematch out there that I should have had and I didn't get.
With Bernard
and
Hopkins.
We all know which one that was.
Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, the one I never got. The one I should have got. You know what I mean? The one that should have even been in there, regardless. I don't know how they slipped that one in and slipped that one by me. But again, man, with everything I gave that night.
Yes.
You know, that's just like your boy moving up fighting GGG, your guy from over in the UK.
Yes.
Can you imagine, you know the welterweight I'm talking about? He moved up for GGG.
Kell Brook.
Kell Brook.
Yes.
Can you imagine GGG company, the people who's ever behind him, fighting that fight with everything he was given Kell Brook without a rematch clause in the contract? So even if you can just wrap your mind around that, you can understand what happened to me in that situation.
That's a very good point.
I'm not saying Bernard Hopkins couldn't beat me. I'm not saying Bernard Hopkins is a great legendary fighter. I'm not saying Bernard Hopkins couldn't beat me. I'm not saying I can't lose to Bernard Hopkins.
Yes.
I'm saying I don't care if it was 100 years. Bernard Hopkins do not dominate, man.
Yes.
You can look at the common opponent that we have. Look at the common opponents. Bernard Hopkins on no damn day dominates. I don't care if I come off the street and they ran not 1 mile and didn't train. Y'all fucking dominated. And that's all I'm saying.
Yes,
and I never got a chance to straighten that.
So do you feel
out.
Do you feel there was a few stones left unturned in your career?
Well, that's undoubtedly. You know that, bro. My career is incomplete.
Okay.
Because I never got a chance to go for the big prize in the sky. I never got a chance to cement my legacy.
Because
I told someone what I was planning on doing. And anything I ever said out my mouth.
Yes.
Anything I ever said out my mouth, I did it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can go back and look. I didn't win the gold, but I went to the Olympics. And I sacrificed 4 extra years to do that without a guarantee.
The thing about me
that set me apart from all the rest of the fighters.
Yes.
I was never willing to take that ultimate risk.
Yes.
You feel me? In the ring at the same time, I'm a risk taker. I will roll the dice. And that's why I know if you put me in the situation, if you put me in the moment, I'm going to come out
covered.
Victorious.
Covered.
That's what separates me. Put me, as big as the moment is, it could be the biggest moment, like winning the heavyweight title.
Yes.
Put me in that moment. I don't give a damn if I'm against Goliath. I'm going to slay his ass.
Yeah, okay. So what I want to know is, what does the more wiser Antonio Tarver tell the younger one? If you was Antonio Tarver Sr., which you are now, talking to the junior, what would you advise him? What would you tell him to do differently?
Man, you know what? You know, if it's inside, if it's in you, bring it out, bro. If it's in you, bring it out.
I love that. Be unapologetic. I love this. Come on, Anto. You don't got to be a round of applause. This is the real talk on the fight. It's right. Come on. Give us the buzz.
If it's in you, bring it out, man.
Right.
Hey, man, look, I've had a great career. Yes. It's been, I owe everything to boxing, bro. You yes. feel me? I love the sport. Yes. I love the game. I love where the game is at today. You know, a lot of hungry young fighters out there. And like I said, I want to put on my business suit now, bro. And I just want to be an example of what these fighters can do and how they can really make an impact on giving back. I think I have something special here yes. in Tampa. I put myself out there. I'm managing and training some of the hottest prospects in the game right now. And if you want someone that really knows the game inside yes. and out, that can guide you and protect you through this game, I mean, I'm your guy. You feel me? Yes, and like I said,
sorry, Antonio. I don't even think it's just that. I think it's that you can illustrate it as well.
Yes.
There's loads of people that. Yes. That have it up in their head, but they can't convey it.
Yes.
I think, I've known you a hot minute now, so I think your conveyancing skills are excellent.
Yes.
I think something like that is really good. And also, it's like, I don't see as much on the TV doing analytical work now for boxing, because I think, like, you're one of the best boxing talkers out
analyzes,
there.
Analyzers, definitely.
Yeah, he's excellent. You're absolutely excellent. I don't know how comes you're not back on the TV doing your stuff, man.
Well, man, you know, we got Tarvis Tate. You can find me on my social media. We're going to be doing and breaking down all the big fights.
Okay.
You know, I'm very, very excited about Harrison and Charlo coming up.
That's a
you
good
know, we
fight.
Got AJ and Ruiz. I'm going to break down that fight.
Right, how you calling that fight, AJ Ruiz? How you calling it?
Come
you
on,
know what?
Obviously,
I'm going to say this. Obviously, somebody's in AJ camp has been listening. Because the first thing I told him when I saw AJ on that scale in the first fight, he's way too big. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like they've been listening. They've leaned him out a lot, a lot more. And I think that in itself will lend to him in winning this fight. I don't know how this fight is going to take place because, like I said, when I watched that first fight, man, it was obvious that Ruiz got skills. And if if Andy Joshua's skill set doesn't improve, I mean, you know, he's going to be in trouble, not in this fight, but even going forward. He got to get a skill set up.
Do you think that?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but he's getting it up now. He's got good guys in his corner now.
Yeah, but that's the point I was going to make. He's enlisted new trainers, but I remember listening to Emmanuel Stewart saying that, you know, when you get a new trainer,
fights.
It takes at least five fights for the new training to set into the boxer. Do you feel AJ's had enough time to take on what the new information is?
The readjustments.
You know what? Now see what happens. What makes a great trainer and a great coach is that how he communicates with the fighter.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the key. How you communicate.
That's exactly
and how
right.
the fighter and how the fighter retains that information.
Yes.
You feel me? Like a lot of people can teach someone but can show someone something, but can they duplicate, like can they do it themselves? See, it's you know,
on.
Can you do it yourself?
Wait,
can you do it
wait,
yourself?
Wait. And this is why I say trainers have to train. Trainers have to train. How are you telling me to do something you can't do? That don't make no sense. It just doesn't make sense. But come on, elaborate more, please, sir.
It makes it easier. It makes it easier when the trainer can actually duplicate or show the fighter what they're trying to convey.
Yes.
You know, it's just easier. And a lot of times, see, you got to win the fighter's confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
come
a big
on.
Piece of training. You got to win the fighter's confidence. That means when you say something to him, he has to be able to say, that's law.
Yes.
That's law. And believe it. That's what, like Buddy McGirt, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just using his name because people know. Like, no matter what we ever did in preparation, I know when the fucking lights hit, between those rounds, I got the best man in that 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what we got to do to make a justice. He's going to give me the right information.
Yes.
And I'm going to go out and execute.
Yes.
Now, that's the key. Execution. They don't pay us for knowing what we know. They pay us for executing what we know. You can know everything, but if you can't execute the shit, what good is it?
Brilliant point. Mm-hmm.
So,
brilliant point.
Execution. Execution is the key. Confidence. You got to be able to show the fighter one time, and he got to believe it. And that's the connection that trainer fighter has to have.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, shit, even with my own son, we butt head, it's not getting through. But let somebody else come tell my son the same thing, he fucking eats it up. So I don't know how the component is for trainer boxing. I don't know the secret sauce or the secret ingredient. All I know is that I believe from all of the trainer that I've been fortunate enough to have, I've been able to retain all of their information that they gave me. And now with my experience and my walk, I can now give it back. Yes, so that's the key. When you look at great trainers, and I'm not saying, you know, hey, Mayweather, he know a lot of things. Oscar De La Hoya, they know a lot of things. I don't see them in there giving these guys the real secret to their success. The real secret. How you knock this motherfucker? How you win this fight? How do you win this fight?
Why do you think that is, Antonio?
Shit, I don't know. It's work. It's hard work. You know what? I don't know how many people that are that can humble themselves enough.
Oh my goodness!
Humble themselves.
Talk on this thing. Talk.
To humble themselves enough to really, you know, be 100 with someone and give it to them as if you want them to truly
succeed.
Win and really be successful. Absolutely. Like, I don't know, but I train everybody. I train like that, like a fucking champion. I'm giving them the same information because I don't know how to do it any other way. I'm giving them, even if I train a 9-year-old fighter, I'm training him the same way I would if I was training somewhere. I'm giving him the same information. It's just from where he's at right now. It don't make sense to give him all the skill sets right now at 9, but it's a gradual step. You got to go through the same ABCD, same way till you get to that platform.
Yes, sir.
So you train them the same way, with the same energy, with the same passion.
Right. And we're gonna wind up now. So I want to know, lastly, what's your call for the Wilder Lewis Ortiz rematch? What's your call? Who you got in this?
That's gonna be a good fight. You know, I can see both of these fighters winning. I don't like to make predictions, but at the end of the day, I believe Wilder still knocks him out. I believe that he'll find a way to knock him out. But at the same time, it's going to be some rough patches in this fight. And if Ortiz is in that type of shape, I believe if he gets Wilder hurt again, like he had him hurt, I think he'll finish him this time. But if Wilder, I think Wilder win this fight by not getting hit to the big punch.
Wow.
I think his defense is going to be more important in this fight than his offense. And I just believe that because Ortiz seemed to be in fantastic shape. Fantastic shape.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure. I can say I talked to Mason. A few years back, me and him were just sitting down, breaking down Terence Crawford against Ricky Burns. Literally just, I was at his house. And years later, both of me and Spencer are talking to the great, the one, the only, Antonio
Magic Man Tower. Thank you very much for the interview, man. God bless. We'll post that to you,
Thanks,
man.
Thanks for having
Keep
me.
On doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Hey, I'm not going to be satisfied. I'm not going to be happy until I'm sitting in the studio with you guys in the UK.
It's coming.
So
come on, it's coming. Don't worry about it. It's coming.
It's coming, right. Brother. All right. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Have a good day.
I mean, we're going to be blessed next weekend because next weekend we've got Philip Bowles.
Hey, Philip. Yeah. Come on.
Versus Rudy.
Mr. Brown. No, his name not really. His name is Mr. Brown.
That's gonna be unbeaten kid.
Yes.
Gonna be unbeaten kid. We see had like
13.
He's 13-0.
Yes.
One stoppage win against Philip Bowles, who's now the Commonwealth champion. That's gonna be a great fight. That's gonna be a very, very good fight.
I ain't getting fooled by that one stoppage business.
No. He can fight. He's got an injury on him. And Philip, as Leon was saying earlier, he's got skills. Very tricky, slippery.
Yes.
That is going to be a really, really good fight.
And
it's a shame it's not on TV.
People don't realize Philip can punch, you know.
Exactly.
Philip can punch. And more time, you know, punches is about your commitment to the punch. But Philip can punch. He's got heavy hands. I've trained him. I trained him when he was like 8 years old.
I remember.
So I know Philip well. Be great to get both of them on the phone.
We got to go do that, man.
Do the business. Draw for the black book. I love this you. I'm not going to lie. He's one of my favourites. Because, bro, see this man here? He comes with a little yard, man. the yard man shoots. You get what I'm saying? All he needs is all he needs now is a kestrel and a domino set. And it'd be like I'm in Spencer's yard. That's how me and Spencer used to come to Spencer's yard and his dad just boom! Double six.
Deuce.
So big up the one, the only, Riddy. You know, some of you know him in his birth certificate name, Akeem Innes Brown. You know, bro, how come all you Jamaicans are names Brown?
No, man.
That's man, yes man, that was good, that was good. Yes.
The man himself, the undefeated, the unstoppable right now. We're going for the big one as well. We're going for the British and Commonwealth
like
titles.
So, man, it's the 29th of November, York Hall.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is for the British and Commonwealth title.
What? This is a serious
one. That's the next one.
For the British and Commonwealth title. So it's for the vacant British title, and it's also for Philip Bowles Commonwealth title.
I'm not gonna lie. I keep it real. I know Philip. This is gonna be a serious fight for me. I'm not taking no sides. I used to train Philip. He's a very technical boxer like yourself. You know. And you know, people might look at your record and think, "Oh, you've only had one stoppage in that." But
don't watch that.
You can't
trick
me. You can't trick me. I don't. Sometimes the reason why man's only got one stop, bro. Tony Bellew was on this show last week telling us he made the same mistake when he fought over McKenzie. See, he looked at his record and he thought, yeah. Bro, this man can't last 2 seconds in a ring with me. Guess what? First round, he was looking up.
The man, the bad drugs.
No, you know, that's what I like. I like this sort of thing now. I like them to come in with that South Beach sort of thing. Yeah, you can't fight, you can't do this and that. And then you get a big shot like, pow, right there, too late. You know what I mean? When they want to get a wake-up call, too late for them, you know?
Yes.
And a lot of people make the same mistake, so... I believe Philip Bowles, if he should be a lot smart enough to not make that mistake, but you never know. People get carried away with their stuff, so he might make the same mistake too. Yes. But if he does, he's in for a wake-up shock as well. So,
tell the people what kind of fight we're expecting, really. Because, bro, you might just come in some yard man thing and just throw the boxing out of the window.
It's definitely going to be an action-packed fight, man. I know that for sure.
Yes.
But obviously, it's like a couple of people I've been doing interviews, they ask the same thing, what a fight to expect. And I just got to say, keep it real. It depends what Philip Bowles turns up, you know what I mean? It depends what Philip Bowles turns up. Because if you get Philip Bowles what just comes and wants to survive, whatever, then you're just going to just have one of them type of fights. But I believe Philip Bowles, he's going to bring it all, you know? I believe he's going to come, bring it all, bring his A-game, and it's going to be two proud men, me proud, him proud, and he's going to be in in his hometown for all these people. So I expect the best Philip Bowles to turn up on a night, but
one
that thing, is what I want. I want the best Philip Bowles to turn
thing
up. I want that.
One thing, I mean, I've watched you come up from the ground, and I said it to you the other day on the phone, like, you never change who you are. You don't need to play no kind of roles. You know, you're a very respectful young man. And even the way you're talking now, and I'm listening to you, I'm saying, bro, this disrespect, but you know what? We need to hype up this thing.
Yeah, for real. Furthermore. Stay on the line.
Oh, no.
Stay on the line. I have to ring Philip Bowles, you know,
ring
because...
Ring him, man.
One second, really.
Come on.
Say no more, man.
Come on, get Philip on the... Bro, you sure you got Philip's number?
Come on, man.
The black book. You know...
Spence, I don't know if he knows I'm on the phone. I don't think he answer. You know, if he knows I'm here, I don't think he answer. You know, ring man thing. I think if phone will ring true, go missing.
No, don't say that, man. He has to answer.
He said he's flying like bird. Hold on, wait, bro. Philip, better answer that phone. Here we go.
Yes,
Jesus Christ. Hold on. Wait.
Lies in the cup. We don't get weed. We don't get weed.
Phil, if you could go to, because I know you're at a ceremony right now, you're meant to be getting an award. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, big up for you to even answer the phone. But we got Riddy on the other line, yeah?
Come on, Philip. Don't let me down, bruv.
And
What's going on?
Yes, Phil, right. Bruv. It's your moment of truth, brother.
But you know what the youth said? I'm not stirring. I'm just being real because you can watch back the show. He said, if Philip Bowles knows that I'm on the other line, you're not going to answer the phone.
Bloody, listen. I'm saying, I ain't to put no rubbish and gas up, man. At the end of the day, man's from the road. Why would I be scared to this ugly brother? Why am I going to be scared to answer the phone to?
Come on, bro. Wait there, Mr. Brown and Mr. Bowles. You two are all fighting for Phillips, British or Commonwealth title.
Yes.
Right? At the historic York Hall.
Come on.
I want parliamentary procedure. No talking over each other.
Hold on, wait. Mickey Elliott better give us some money because we're hyping up this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
What, Philip Arthur? Philip's
there.
Hold on, wait.
Introduce yourself to each other, brothers.
Yeah. Philip, you can start.
You start, Philip.
Yeah, man. I'm a veteran in the game. You know, Philip Quicksilver Bowles, Commonwealth champion. You know, fighting next week against Riddy. King Bandit Brown. Yeah, man. I'm with his hair.
Mr. Brown, your reply, please.
Really, really rival, a.k.a. Akeem and the Sound. A great if. We're going to do great. Come next Friday, you have the new British Commonwealth champion. Better know. Be ready.
Come on. Philip. Wait. Let me show you how this thing go. Philip, you're not a disrespectful guy. Riddy, you're not a disrespectful guy, and I know, but I want to hear both of you how you aim to win the fight. First off, Philip.
Say that again. I'm sorry, the phone chipped out. Say that again.
Why are you going to win the fight? Yeah. Not even how. Why are you going to win the fight? Because I know you're going to get no game plans. Why are you going to win this fight, Phil?
I can answer it earlier. He thinks I'm a crap boxer or something. He thinks my style's ugly and not that good. So he feels himself like, you know what I mean? Philip, do you believe that or are you just talking for the interview? You're talking for the interview to make it interview. No, you don't believe that. Come on.
Philip, defend the case, man. We're London.
Come on, Philip.
Listen. Bottom line is this. I'm not going to talk over you. I'm going to wait for you to finish. You said what you said. Bottom line is this. I don't think your style's good. I don't think you're a rubbish boxer, but I just don't think your style's good. That's the bottom line. I think I've got superior style that to you. I think my style is very handsome like me, and that's the bottom line.
Yes sir.
Right, so right, wait, really, a man's trying to say you're ugly, you know.
These like guys, I don't know what they think, bro. They all think they're pretty boys. They're like, if they're just boxing, bro. You can't form no pretty boys out here, bro. Like, I mean, this guy think, bro, you know what I mean? So it's all good. Let these little pretty boys think that it's all that type of game.
All right, listen. Riddy, please tell us how you're gonna win this fight. Come on, because, you know, Phil's a veteran, very calm, cool and collected. He just believes he's got a more superior style to you. But come on.
That's not good enough. That's not good enough. But when you come against a fighter like me, he hasn't been against a fighter like me. That's not good enough. All that calm, collected. Nah, bro, you better be ready, bro. I'm gonna drag him to some deep waters right now. That's what I'm saying, bro. Like, you're gonna feel it, bro. Like, you know what I mean? You're gonna feel a real fight. You know, you got a real fight on your hands this fight.
Listen. This is not no bad man talk on the radio, but we'll see next week Friday. I ain't got time for all this gimmicks and back and forth business. Next week Friday, everyone just be at your call and we'll see what's popping. That's it.
Brilliant.
You think you're gonna win, Philip? You think you're gonna win?
Of course, I'm gonna win. I know I'm going to win. Listen. We can't both talk at the same time. The bottom line is this. Me and you was cool. Yes. You called me out for no reason. Now we're fighting. Listen, We can't both talk. You didn't listen to what I'm saying. We can't both talk on the radio. You done your thing. I was congratulating you that you beat Glenn Ford. Yes or no?
Yes, that's a good point.
Right. Hold on. Wait, listen, Akeem, let me finish. Let me finish, bro, because you keep talking. Let me just talk and you can talk. I'm not going to interrupt you. When you beat Glenn Ford, was I congratulating you? Yes or no?
Yeah.
When you beat Chris Jenkins, was I congratulating you and saying, little bro, good, do your thing, blah, 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 blah. Yes or no?
Yes, bro. Yeah.
Right. So bottom line is this. We was chatting regularly on the Instagram, and then all of a sudden you called me out because Lee Eaton told you that I've ducked you. Yes or no?
I wouldn't say it's more than that. I would say like this, yeah. Can I talk now? My turn to talk, yeah?
No, yeah, cool.
Got you. And let me just say, before you say something, that is a very good point, because I was going to bring that up. You know, both of you have a common opponent in Glenfoot. Philip lost by unanimous decision to Glenn, and you beat Glenfoot. So that's a very good point you made there, Phil. But sorry, I just had to make that.
Yeah, go on, Mr. Brown. Go on, continue. Mr. Brown.
Yep. All right, so cool. Let's check it, yeah? Regardless of all that, congratulations, all that stuff from before, whatever, yeah? That's all cool. We can all be cool in this. Like, what you got to remember about this? The way I look at this sport, yeah, is it's not personal. It's just business, you know what I mean? I can call a man out and still be cool with a guy, you know what I mean? So let's just check it, yeah? If you, as the Commonwealth champion, yeah, you've got to suspect people, the guy below you, or hungry, the guy who wants the title to come up and get like theirs, you know what I mean? You've got to understand that you cannot get upset when you get...
Listen, there's no problem, but you could have said, let's make the fight, but all trying to say that I'm disrespecting you, but you said to me, you said...
You're saying about Lee, yeah, whatever, this and that, yeah, you got made, yeah, good offers, yeah, to like, fight me, yeah.
No, listen, Akeem, listen to what I'm saying to you. Listen, no, that's not how it went.
Let me just.
They're not in the game to like progress and be the best or be the greatest. If you're just in this year to pick up titles here and make yourself look like you're a champ, make yourself look like and fool the public, and no, I don't respect that. Bro.
Can I? Listen, hold on. Listen, you're just chatting. Well, no one didn't dock the fight for me, brother. Help me, if I thought the fight, why am I fighting for the British and the Commonwealth? Listen, I could say, you know what?
You've been forced to fight. The board of
No. Hold on. Listen.
One at a time.
Listen, quickly, because I'll go back to the awards, yeah? Listen. If I, forced to fight, because guess what? I could still defend my Commonwealth and not care about the British. I care about the British, 100%. So I'm fighting you. The bottom line is, if I was running, why would I still fight you? It doesn't make sense.
Now you're a proud man. You're a proud man going to fight. You're going to fight. Yeah, cool. Yeah, let's get it on.
On that note,
let me just say, Riddy, in your last fight, you beat an undefeated fighter, Bilal Rahman or something like that, 12-0. And Philip Bowes had a very good win in his last fight against Tom Farrell. I think, Philip, you went up to Liverpool, innit, to fight that fight?
I went to Liverpool, yeah.
And you boxed tremendous. Yeah, and really good. I think... You know, this is a great fight. We've set it up perfectly on the fighters, right? Everybody, I know you man are going to be doing some different kind of running tonight. Because both of you's going. Listen, man, but you know, when all said and done, you are two hungry athletes.
It is what it is. Like, I think, yeah, like with Philip, his problem is that he takes his stuff too personal, bro.
Go on, carry on talking,
Mr. Brown.
Sorry.
I mean, take it way too personal, yeah. Like I said, yeah, the way I look at this, yeah, it's his business, you know what I mean? Once I beat him, I will come out and shake his hand, I'll take him for a drink, we can go get food, we can still be cool after, you know what I mean? It's no problem, bro. Like, I don't take this stuff personal, bro. When I win the title, when people calling me out, I'm not going to get upset about blocking people and hiding and moving funny and stuff like that, yeah. Getting upset over it. Like, I accept all challenges, bro, you know what I mean? And that's how it comes, bro.
Lovely. Listen.
Philip, I don't know why you take it all differently, bro.
Listen,
like,
gentlemen.
I'm coming once. Yeah, listen, that's all great what you said. Next week Friday, we'll get it on and let's start the talking.
Gentlemen, and like you say, yeah, meet me in the jungle.
All right. Ready. Hold tight, Philip. You are a gentleman as always. Cool, calm.
Thanks for taking your time out. Good luck with your award that you collected today.
Yeah, man. One love. And I'll see you lot next week, yeah?
100%. We're there. We ain't missing that.
Ireland.
We're there.
One love. Take care.
Really, Mr. Brown, thank you for joining us on the Fighters Right. Seriously.
Really, you are the man. You hype up the team proper.
Right. So,
yeah, man. I'll go get this.
Yeah, man. I'm just wishing all of you the best of luck.
Definitely.
And we'll be down there, man. So, 100%. Yeah, man. Both of you putting that work. Thank you so much for being on the show. Yeah.
Big up. I'm gonna say, big up you, man. Tunde Spencer, bro. What you man are doing, yeah? Like big things, bro. I got a lot of respect for what you do. Yeah. Because through the young man like us, and nah, bro. Like you lot opening doors and doing great things, and even. Not even whether it's like black, white, you lot are doing proper good things, and I'm glad you've got some real black role models we can look up to. You know what I mean? We haven't got enough of them to look up to yet, so I'm glad like the people like you are.
I told you, brother. I told you on the phone the other day. I have been secretly watching your rise to this moment. And I see how much you want it. I've seen you in a little kid boxing as an amateur. I saw you one time on one video. I think you was living with Tim Witherspoon or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah.
I see it. You was all around, and you know, it's all boiled down to this moment. And I wish you all the best. Again, Philip Bowles is a long time friend of mine. Listen, Philip used to train with me when he was like 6 years old. He came
to stay with
gym.
You.
He used to stay in my yard. So like, but as you said, quite rightly said, this is business. You know, it's not personal. We're all out here. We're trying to better ourselves, better our families. And again, I just thank you for coming on the show. You're a young man. You're on the rise. And yeah, you're doing your business.
I love for that, man. Love for that, bro. All right. I guess I'll catch you that down next week, yeah?
100% with 100%.
There, man. 100%. Once right. again, yeah. Riddy... No, I'm not even calling you Riddy. I'll call you Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown. Oh, yes.
And
got a bookie shop with him.
Mr. Brown and Mr. Boaz. Let's get it on. On
it, man.
The fight is right.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we want you to go out there and ask us any questions for the show. Because, you know what I mean? Without you guys, we're nothing. So we like to interact with you guys.
How much cream do you use on a face? Yeah, we want to hear interaction from the audience. So ask us anything. You know, ask us a boxing question, a life question, you know, a motivational question. We'll pick two or three out of the hat.
And roll it onto the show.
And we'll roll it onto the show.
It's been a plum pleasing pleasure today. It's been one of them days, man. You know what I mean? Like,
what a show.
You know what I mean, Antonio Tarver.
It just keeps getting better.
John Barnes, you know. John Barnes.
No podcast can talk to me. I don't care what no one says. John Barnes. You can't beat that. You can't. Hold on. Andy Cole, John Barnes.
Yeah.
My hero, Gary Ciro, is Cole. My hero is John Barnes. I used to have the big bite. You know, running down the ring with a big dog. John was slim them days there. It's later on in his career. I think he had a bit too much Jamaican patties. But John Barnes.
It's been a really, really good show. I want to say to everyone who is liked and subscribed and downloaded
and commented
on YouTube, on Spotify,
yes,
you know what I mean, on iTunes and on
SoundCloud, yes,
right. I'm just so grateful. And I'm overwhelmed. So I've got to say thank everybody for the support. Tunde, over to you, my friend.
Well, the black book does it again. That's all I can say, and I'm gonna sign out by saying this. Dream it, believe it, become it. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe to the Stamina for Soul YouTube channel.